As you may have guessed, I'm not the gentleman that was supposed to be presenting this session. Do bear with me. My name's Sue Potten. I am Director of New Business and Senior Account Director at George P. Johnson, one of the world's leading experience marketing agencies. I'm based in our EMEA headquarters in the UK. I do have a reasonable amount of data and experience to draw upon, but I really want this to be also a collaborative session, because I'd love after this session to be able to put some things together that we can share and circulate amongst ourselves as to what we see collectively as some of our pain points and issues that we're facing. Well, I just feel like this is like a giant ball pit, only keep me back. You can tell my personality type can't sit still for 5 minutes. So, okay. Firstly, just to set some expectations, I may have only found out at 6 o'clock last night that I was standing in for this speaker, but don't worry, I do have some content that I could draw upon, so it's not going to be quite as flung together as I may have made it sound. What I'd like to do is really focus on what's happening generally in the marketplace before we start isolating what's happening in meetings and events, because I think you can't do one without the other. It makes no sense to start doing a deep dive straight into what's happening in our specific universe. We need to look at the whole big picture. So, as we know, it's been a tough time. I mean, industry's been really badly hit. My company, for example, in the US, we do a lot of work in the automotive industry. It doesn't take Einstein to figure out what's happened in Detroit, especially when General Motors is one of your biggest clients in the United States. So I think a lot of us have taken a bit of a hit. So firstly, congratulations for everybody for still being here, I think, is great. We all know the economy's been very rocky. We've also had a number of other factors which have impacted our business quite considerably. So I love the way this guy tries to put a positive spin on the whole thing. But a lot of people might say that actually we're now presented with what you might call a perfect storm. All of these factors have really come together. Yes, we've had to really look very carefully and very hard at how we go about putting our events and our marketing activities, our business activities together. And I think that when you come under scrutiny on things like budgets and what's happening in the environment and corporate travel policies and things like codes and regulations, I know Anna's here from our pharmaceutical world, so I'll be calling on you a bit later, Anna. All of those things actually really do test us quite considerably. But I think, in my opinion, what this then creates is the ideal opportunity to perform at an even higher level and really deliver great results. So let's look at some of these converging trends. Again, these are general sort of marketplace trends, but they do have a huge impact on the meetings and events industry. So obviously the impact of technology. You know, we're all sitting here, I mean, everybody's got their SpotMe devices, you've got your Blackberries, everybody was on email probably this morning, probably quite late last night if you're like me. And we're just wired and connected to everything. We're encouraged these days to, you know, tweet when we're in the middle of meetings. No longer the norm to say, let's stand up, please turn your mobile phones off. It's like, please turn your phones on and here's the address that you need to tweet to. The economy, as we know, I'm not going to dwell on that, and I'm certainly not an economist, so I'm not going to claim to be an expert, but obviously it's taken quite a hit. And I think the way that consumers, and when we say consumers, I think you can apply that to delegates and attendees, I think their personalities have changed. We've all changed. I don't want people, you know, I'm not like a loyal brand follower anymore. You know, I want what I want, and I want when I want it, and I want it how I want it. And I think every single person in this room is the same. So targeted, focused marketing and focused experiences have also become the new norm for us. We're much more picky, hence the very picky-looking pussycat sitting there. Marketing, I apologize for this particular graphic, but on the marketing side, again, it's no longer a question of just You can shout at your consumers, it's consistent messaging. There are so many different channels that people get their information from. So What does this all lead to? When we look at technology, as I said, I don't need to really go through all of these, but everybody's very well connected. That's every single audience member, every single person that we're trying to meet to actually target to experience our events, our brands, our key messages, whatever our objectives might be. Obviously, new media. That's actually quite scary when you see all those lists. I mean, I only know about 10% of those, and I think I'm reasonably tech savvy. So, what does that mean for all of us? We have an interesting generation of future attendees and future audiences. And I love what Anne's done in this room, I think, is really, you know, but it's not just being funky for funky's sake. There's actually a purpose behind it. I'd just like to ask, you know, how does it feel just kind of chilling out in that lounge area? You look very relaxed. Yeah, okay. So I think interesting that people have, you know, again, there's an awareness that people have choices and people have options of what they would like to do. I think the other one of the key changes that we've seen, of course, is the fact that it's all about me, it's all about you, it's all about you as individuals. It's no longer appropriate to just do mass marketing and think that that's going to work. Again, because we're used to being able to gain information on our terms, under our conditions, and when we're absolutely ready. And I love the Time Person of the Year, I think it was last year or even the year before, Person of the Year. And it's always a very, very much anticipated magazine cover. And what they said is the Person of the Year is you. It's me. It's you, Charles. It's you, Joseph. It's brilliant. So, what I guess I'm leading up to is the fact that attendees and anybody that we're trying to reach out to has the ability to just switch off. Much as we're all connected, you can also switch off, and you do have the ability to just say no. And I think when we come into drilling down a bit further into specific meetings and event trends, we can talk about the impact that that has and what that means to you when you're trying to market events, when you're creating content and all of those activities. Yeah, I think this is a great, very powerful image, a real turn-off. Nobody wants to be shouted at anymore. So let's talk about how marketers see the importance of events. I mean, that's all great. We hear about how consumers are changing. There's a whole different landscape. But what's really key is, and this is the MPI EventView 2009 Global Report, which was also co-sponsored by George P. Johnson. And it was a survey to several hundred marketing professionals, not even people in the meetings and events industry. And I think what was really key is that out of all of these different elements that you can see, so event marketing, print advertising, broadcast advertising, PR, web marketing, and direct mail, that actually event marketing is still seen as being the most effective for accelerating and deepening relationships. Now, that's a relief to all of us. That's the good news. That's really important. In terms of meeting preferences, again, I apologize for some of the small text up here. But you can see face-to-face is the darker green. So we're talking about in terms of persuasion, leadership, engagement, inspiration, decision-making, and so on down through that list. Face-to-face meetings score extremely high with these particular individuals. And this, by the way, was a survey that was conducted in US and throughout EMEA. Web conferences, I think we may well see that through this Forbes Insight report that if when it's done again for next year, the web conference elements will probably increase, and we can talk about that. I've got some information on what's happening in web and virtual events. And then, as you can see, video conference and teleconference. But primarily, again, great news for those of us in the meetings and events industry, people still do want to meet face-to-face. So how many people in this room were in the virtual event session yesterday? Okay, just two or three. So forgive me if some of this covers some of the same ground. I think it's slightly different information, just a bit more of an overview. But I think that there's something else that we're seeing is much more of a convergence of live and online strategies. I find it really interesting when people try and classify an event. Is it a live event? Is it an online event? Is it a virtual? Is it a hybrid? An event is an event is an event. That's the way I see it. And ideally, it should be a convergence of all of these different things to suit your particular audience and your media. So what we're seeing more and more is this combined sort of holistic experience, which brings together the best in face-to-face engagement and delegate brand experiences with online digital media, and it becomes much more of an extended program as well. Again, I think people, because we're used to being connected, how many people here actually accessed the conference website in advance, other than just to register for this particular event? Okay, how many people looked at the delegate attendee list, downloaded the registration list? How many people looked at the know before you go fact file and report? So this is, you know, prime example. We don't want to just show up and attend the meeting anymore. We want to drive our participation to get the most out of our involvement in events. And that's just human nature. So when we're planning and putting conferences together and events together of any type of brand experience, what we're seeing more and more now is the need to really create a fully holistic campaign and think about it almost in those terms as an experience campaign. So you have your pre-event, not just standard pre-event mailers and communications, but it becomes a continuous life cycle. You know, ideally when we leave this event, we'll be able to go online to the registration, to the conference website and to mpiweb.org, and then start downloading some of the materials, some of the highlights. We'll be able to connect with people that we've met. This engagement shouldn't just stop and come to a dead point even just a few weeks after the event. And I think more and more organizations now are trying to build and maintain communities that last throughout the entire year if it's an annual program. And obviously if there are more frequent activities, you know, nirvana is that if you can capture your audience and keep them involved throughout the entire process, then that's just terrific. And you can only do that by making sure that you actually reach out to them through so many different touch points. And that's not going to be purely face-to-face. I don't know how many of you have heard about this story or are familiar with it in any way, but this is quite a bold move by Cisco. Last year, in fact, I'll go rewind, 2008, Cisco Global Sales Conference. About 15,000 salespeople from all over the world flew into Las Vegas in the middle of August. It's a great conference, lots of great education sessions, lots of great workshops, fantastic content. Aerosmith was the band on the closing night. You know, it was a really significant event. Sales guys had a great time, all dutifully got on their planes home, feeling, I'm sure, very tired, but full of enthusiasm to carry on doing their work. 2009, no conference. Complete scale back, completely different approach. Now, in the opening general session, we heard the speaker talk about how important it is to just be bold. Be bold, take dramatic steps, and then look back. And I think this is a really good example of exactly that sort of philosophy. Instead of trying to figure out a way that they could gradually introduce some more digital components, I think Cisco really realized that, you know, here's an opportunity to just do something completely radical. And you know what? If it doesn't work, then we'll go back to the old ways. But we're going to be bold. This is a company that really has a very, obviously, a very strong vested interest in the telepresence market. And also very committed to the environment. So I think they felt that this was going to send out a really strong message to not just their employees, but also to corporate America. 19,000 attendees. The year before, in 2008, there were 15,000. So they picked up 4,000 attendees by going virtual with this event. Now, it wasn't as straightforward as just, hey, we're going to put some things on a website and we'll go for it. There was a very deep strategy behind this. There were gaming components. I'll show you some of, here's the, one of the screens, which was, it was called the Threshold. A lot of work was done by some of my colleagues in the States, especially that work with Cisco, on understanding what are the key drivers for a lot of the attendees. How can we ensure that people actually sit and participate in sessions? Those of you that were in the virtual session yesterday heard the speaker say the challenge with virtual events is that you're only really one click away from somebody doing something else. Boom, I've got an email. Oh, sorry, Mr. Speaker, I'm just going to go and do this. So it was really, really important that the content really engaged with the attendees. So things like virtual gaming sessions, chat rooms. Now, I mean, these statistics are just quite remarkable. 88 hours, 24 time zones, 13,000 active players of this alternative reality game, and there were several other sort of virtual games and online components like that, quizzes, incentives, those elements that went through it. 8,000 participants within a group chat zone. That's really quite remarkable. And I think very significantly, and it's not last by any means because it's less significant, but 90% cost savings. Now, it's not all a completely rosy picture. I don't want anyone suddenly starting to think, gosh, you know, where are we going to go with all our meetings and events now if this is going to be the new norm? I think what will actually happen is that a lot of these this type of event is going to happen again this year. Cisco are not doing a live sales meeting on the same scale that they've done in previous years. But I think what may happen is that there's more of a pendulum shift back somewhere in the middle. So more along some live activities in certain hub locations, rather than flying people into lots of different places, maybe, you know, different regional meetings linked digitally to across their global network. I think that's going to be probably the way that it will shake out. You know what, one of the attendees actually said in a survey, nothing, a virtual beer doesn't taste that good. And I think that sort of sums it up. It might be better for you. But yeah, you're absolutely right. Absolutely right. And I think that's where companies like Cisco realize that there needs to be a sort of happy medium and a blend of all of those activities, as we said previously. Just to prove the importance of face-to-face, it's amazing when you look and see how many meetings, events, activities, meetups have actually been sparked by online communities. You know, tweet-ups. Who'd have thought that we'd be talking about tweeting up? I even saw on the, EMEC 10, the Twitter page for this conference, someone was trying to organise a tweet-up the other night. I thought, actually, we're already at a party, but anyway. eBay Live. You know, eBay, this community of people, I mean, I think one of the first examples, which I think is a lovely story, is about these people that collect antique toys. And they all started connecting online about what antique toys they collect and how great all these toys are and what toys have you got? I've got these toys that sell to this. You know what? They've created an event. It's an association conference now of the eBay antique toy collectors. So that, to me, is just remarkable and I think really reinforces the power of connectivity and face-to-face. My boss, Kim Meyer, and I met recently with a client in Helsinki. And this company produces medical imaging systems. And we were talking to them about all this equipment that they have, these ultrasound systems and everything else like that. And they were telling us that they have this online community of users. It's an online user group. They have probably 2,000 or 3,000 active members and participants. And the number one discussion that they have on their message boards and chat rooms is, when are we going to meet? So I think just to again address the balance of the Cisco story, I think we've all seen, and in the report from EventView, that face-to-face meetings are still very, very important. Does anyone have any questions, by the way? Any comments at all? No? See, this early session after the party the night before is a killer. So a few more trends I want to share with you. This is from trend watching. Does anyone use trend watching? Yes, one hand goes up there. I can highly recommend it. It does become somewhat addictive, and you start learning new language, and I can't claim to be able to translate all of this by any means. But what I thought was really interesting is that trend watching said the top 10 trends for 2010. Number 5, mass mingling. We're adding new terminology to our language all the time, which really fascinates me. But again, this ties into the fact that our online lifestyles really are fueling this drive to meet face-to-face. So all those predictions of, you know, we're never going to be meeting again, we're all going to be sitting at our desks, we're going to be connecting via webcam, it's not true. And we're seeing that, as we said previously, with all the tweet-ups, the eBay Toy Collectors Conference, and all of those activities. I think just to sum up on this section, because I said what I wanted to do at the start was really just talk about just general marketing and industry trends, is that nothing counts like an experience. A virtual beer really does not taste good. And it's all about that connectivity, the human relations, the interface, and the whole experience of actually connecting a group of people who share common interests. Now, this is a survey. Martin, I may end up calling on you. Martin very kindly shared with me. Martin Lewis, who is with Cat Publications, who is just sitting over there, not looking in my direction at all at the moment. Martin, I found out, as you know, I mentioned at the top, I found out at 6 o'clock last night that I was going to be presenting this session. And I was actually having a beer with Martin at the time and said, I've got some things to talk about in terms of general marketing trends, industry trends, and so on. And it would be really good to have some specific meetings industry data to be able to call upon. And Martin, being a true pal, very kindly bounced some slides over to me in the wee hours of this morning, I think. So this is actually the results of a survey with the British meetings and events industry. And what I'd like to do actually is I've just picked out 2 or 3 key slides which I hope will be of interest. And then I'd like to just get some of your reaction, because obviously we're not talking about the UK market right now. I'd love to see what you're seeing in your marketplace and if you feel that that also is true for your particular environment. So this was conducted last year, 300 corporate event organisers, 300 UK association managers, so 600 participants in total. When we look at the number of events from July 2008 to July 2009, I think what's really interesting is, now Martin, you may have to help me out on this, I made a note of all these comments. Actually 33% of the corporate people who were surveyed actually said that they were going to be doing 33% less meetings. Now, that's quite remarkable. Not a huge surprise, but that's a third of the corporate market surveyed said that they would be cutting their meeting number by a third. Conversely, associations seem to be less affected. Now, probably that's also due to the fact that a lot of association events are planned much further out. You're looking at least a 12-month planning cycle for an association conference, if not, in some instances, years ahead. And that's very much part of a membership service that is offered. But that dip in corporate meetings I thought was really interesting. When we look at the year ending June 2010, I think things do start looking a little bit brighter. And then There was one more that I picked out here, which I thought was really interesting, which is that actually corporate events are being reduced in the time frame. So not only are corporate planners doing less meetings, but they're shorter. And I think that was a really, again, not a big surprise, but I was just surprised at the actual volume of the reduction. Does anybody have any comment or questions on any of that? Can anyone share their experiences? And do we have a microphone that I can...
Hello.
Thank you.
Yeah, Mike Staworski from Arizona chapter. I would say, certainly in the U.S., I would think your general, from the British numbers, it's the same in the U.S. too. Certainly corporate is a little more volatile up and down as of late, and associations don't have the same dollars typically as corporate events, but they're more consistent and they happen more regularly, probably because associations have to meet where corporates don't have to meet generally. So I would say certainly associations are holding their own, and everything is back up since our U.S. recession, which in theory was over in September, doesn't feel like it in a lot of ways, but it was over officially, is that we're on the way back up, and slowly by the latter half of this year it's supposed to come back significantly. Let's hope.
Yes. So are you looking, what about your landscape in particular in your business?
Same thing. I probably, same percentages. I probably was down 20-25% last year. I had several clients that closed up shop and actually closed operations. Some were not going to hold 2009 events, but are coming back to have a 2010 event. In particular, the Phoenix, Arizona market, it's taken it quite badly. Our hotel resort market is one of the worst ones right now in the country because it's a pretty robust area. So a robust area, certainly when you have a hit, you know, takes it worse than most. But it's coming back. In our chapter, we probably lost 70 or 80 members in the past in 9 months because a lot of them just have, there's been a fair amount of job loss and volatility. You know, we'll lose 20, gain 10, gain 15, lose.
Right.
It's pretty much up and down quite a bit, but that's just the way it is these days.
Okay, good. Thank you, Michael.
Thank you.
Anybody else? Can we have another? Yeah.
I'm Luca from the Italian chapter, and I agree with the figures from the UK and also what Mike's saying from the USA. I mean, roughly the same sort of trend in Italy, ups and down, mainly down, a lot of loss and a little bit of pickup now. I mean, today is more optimistic. We're more optimistic than we were last year in
mm-hmm.
Turin, I must say. I think
mm-hmm.
it's a little bit getting a little bit better.
Good. Thank you. Vanessa, can I pick on you to talk about the exhibit world in a moment, as far as Reed's perspective?
Thank you. I'm Heiner from SmallWorks in Germany, and one of the things that we observe is that while there is a reduction, yes, but there is also some unexplainable resistance to innovate. We see enormous budgets for large events. I mean, big utility companies, 600, 700, 800 people, and they still go for the old conventional formats, and they get corresponding feedback afterwards. And we still haven't figured out where is this, what is this mental blockage that keeps them from really doing stuff like what we did yesterday with Song Division, stuff like that. It's not always money, because they spend money on decoration and food and you know, big lumps of money on stuff that's gone the next day. And at the same time, there is this enormous resistance to really go for new stuff. I mean, it's more and more of the same. It's probably security. We've talked to event managers. And if somehow the industry would manage to break through this being stuck in the old days, there wouldn't be a need to reduce. I can see the reduction because the ROI on some of the meetings that are being organized is pretty low. I mean, if the dominating media is still PowerPoint, you don't even get 10% retention rate. That's neurology proven almost. And yet there is, it's almost like going from steam engine to a diesel engine. There's this enormous resistance to change technologies. We still see that.
Thank you. Does anyone have a comment or response to that? Has anyone experienced success in driving innovation, in even if it's in just in one element of a meeting or event? Michael, thank you.
You know, I have some of my clients that definitely are the same way, where they're scared to innovate because they're afraid they're going to being out of the box at all would upset their attendees. I mean, I had a client where I was something as simple as a speaker walked up to a stage to play some music to bring them onto a stage, and I did that once kind of on my own, and the client was like, "You brought music on? Let's not do that again." It's like, oh my word. I mean, that's so normal in a lot of events, and this one client, I think it was a school, university-related thing, and very stodgy, not very much thinking out of the box, and they were upset that I brought music on to bring a speaker up, which would be kind of endearing, kind of nice, and they weren't off of that at all. So it's a lot of resistance in a lot of ways. Maybe it depends on the kind of event and all that. Maybe it's traditional school. Maybe utilities are not into it. Maybe more corporate. Let's try something new. Can do things like that. A lot of areas just don't. The way it is, it's always the way it is, and that's the best thing.
Over to Vanessa, please, and then Ilka.
Hi, I'm Vanessa Codden, the chair of Read Travel Exhibitions, Meetings and Incentives Events. And we've got five different trade shows in five different continents. And what we saw with AIBTM, our flagship event in Barcelona, which I'm sure many of you attended last year, we saw that our stand bookings were down by 10%. But what happened was that exhibitors were cutting back, some exhibitors were cutting back a little bit on their show size. So I think if you were walking the floor, you probably wouldn't have noticed much, if any, change in what the show actually looked like. But correspondingly, we had the same number of trade visitors, the same number of hosted buyers, and more pre-scheduled appointments. And it was my first year at that show in my capacity as this position for Reed. And I was actually blown away by the buzz. Other people were too. The buzz from the first minute that we opened the door with that urge to do business. So my view with the market is whether you're a corporate, you're going to be reducing the number of meetings you do for all sorts of reasons. If you're a trade show organiser, suppliers and buyers are going to be picking and choosing where they go because we're cash poor, we're time poor, we've got the choice of other media. So the things that we engage with, we really, really want them to work. We want lots of touch points, lots of different platforms, and we want value for our engagement.
Thank you, Vanessa. Ilka.
Hello, my name is Ilka from Symantec, and I would like to respond to the gentleman from Germany. Why are the companies so hesitating to change their keynotes or sessions? Why is it always in the same way? I think the first step is really to convince the management. And we do it, our keynotes, for example, completely different. So we do it in an interview format. It's more like a Letterman show. We have a band on stage. It works fantastic. And really, our keynote has its own brand. It's the Morton Show. That's how we call it, because our moderator is Steve Morton, our vice president of product marketing. So he's a very entertaining person, and this is, I think, the thing you have to think about. Do you have a good moderator? Are they able to do these new formats? And this is really the challenge you have, and you have to convince your management that doing things differently will work much better than doing it the old classic way. And also you get more people to your keynotes. They are waiting for attending and that the keynote will start. So this is really, it changes everything. But it's sometimes hard to convince your own management team. And this is, I think, the first step you have to do because otherwise you won't change anything.
Change is hard. The thing not to get too hung up on, though, is change for change's sake. Although you mentioned, sorry, I didn't catch your name, but you mentioned that the surveys and the results were saying that people were getting tired of the same old thing, which is a problem, clearly, and escalating that data up to the key stakeholders to make sure that they listen to that, I think, is really key. Does anybody have any experience of measuring events where perhaps the response and the call to action and the results have not been that great, but you've been able to create any kind of shift? That's really interesting. Yeah. So we talk about innovation, but how can you actually drive innovation if you're not really measuring what's working and what's not working, and then being able to adjust and recalibrate along the way? I think that's really key to be able to convincing key stakeholders, particularly senior executives, who, you know, they want to see the data, they want the facts, they want the figures, and I think that's really important. Yes, there's another comment there.
Hi, my name is Alessia and I work on Mallorca for a small company called Pide la Luna. We organized an event last year for an institution and brought SpotMe. And SpotMe guys say that usually their satisfaction rate is 90% from users, and actually we could see it. It was the most successful innovation for the event, and people would recommend it for other events. So yes, we did measure it, and it was true what they promised. So we did go to for innovation. I hope we can work with SwarmWorks too.
Yes, that was good fun, SwarmWorks. I'd never come across that before. Okay, so thank you for that and for sharing those thoughts and feedback. So we've gone from duration of events and sort of then moving on to what contributes to, most contributes to a successful event. And again, this is where I think it really just reinforces everything that we've been talking about at this event about the importance of the content and messaging. So with the corporate and association market, the content that was relevant to work and daily life was really top of the tree, on parity there, and actually pretty level throughout every single result. So the drivers here are very, very similar. Inspiring and original presentations, and those of us that are responsible for putting content together and sourcing speakers, I think that's a constant challenge, because there are some fantastic speakers out there and great motivational presenters and everything else. But again, it goes back to what I was saying about the way that the marketplace is shifting. People, every single audience member will perceive things in a different way. They want content on their terms, in their timelines, as it suits them, delivered to their preferences. And I think that becomes increasingly challenging then. I was talking to Ken Sanders, who works for Freeman. He's chair of the MPI Foundation, I believe, currently. And he's been over from the States for this conference. And he was telling me that one of the things that he's seen happening a lot at some of the big US technology events is what they've coined this phrase called overflow on demand. Again, another new set of language we've got to learn. Sounds like a bit of a plumbing issue for me, but overflow on demand. What that is, particularly when you've got very tech-savvy attendees, as an example, who, you know, we've all done it here. You go into a room and you look and you think, oh, is that really a session I want to go to? It's quite busy. The only seat left is the one right at the very front. I don't know if I want to go in there. For this type of audience wants to be able to grab bite-sized pieces of information from multiple different formats at different times. And we all do it that to some extent ourselves at home. You know, we're on our BlackBerries, we're on our laptops, we're watching the TV, we've got something else happening. So instead of that single-channel focus, some of these big tech events in the States now are having these sort of banks of almost like studios of television sets outside of the main conference room where attendees can just sit and plug in and go, I want to see channel one. And they just tune their headset into channel one and they listen to that presentation for as long as they'd like. They can channel hop. If they then decide that they want to get a deeper engagement, then they actually quite often go into the conference room to listen to the rest of that session. Now, I thought that was really remarkable, but somebody else that was in that discussion said, well, we could never do that. And I asked why, and they said, because people would not go to the meeting. And I thought, hang on a minute, who are we creating the meeting for? You know, who's the content for? And that it was just, I don't think there's necessarily a right or wrong, but I thought that was a really interesting concept and a really interesting discussion. So when we talk about content relevant, original presentations, obviously networking, again, comes back to what we said about Cisco, virtual beer doesn't taste very good, ease of access in travel, and of course the quality of the venue, very, very important. I didn't include the slide that talks about what least contributes, but I think number one up there was things like celebrity speakers and entertainment and what we might perceive as being more of the, if you like, the fluff. Now, as I said, we've got about 15 minutes left to go, and I said at the very start what I wanted to do was start off with some bigger picture marketing trends, general trends about consumers, about attendees. I'd really like to open this up a bit now, and literally this was done quite late last night. I just put a few of my top line thoughts together, and would love to get some feedback and commentary and discussion on some of these. For me, these, are, I think, are some of the key meeting industry trends. When we're talking about our day-to-day operations and some of those elements, certainly the continued involvement of purchasing. I would say probably currently about 75% of the clients I meet with are in a purchasing function. And they're talking about continuing to consolidate their list of suppliers, their list of agency partners. It's not always all about cost reduction. I'm pleased to say in some instances it may be, but it's just about streamlining practices and processes, really making sure that there's brand consistency across everything that's happening. And then, of course, the sort of portfolio optimization and measurement, particularly for big corporate organizations where they have many regional markets. What we're seeing is the sort of global and centralized purchasing function really taking up the mantle of perhaps what used to be more of a chief marketing officer's job, or multiple brand teams would be working on this, where they're now working regionally to ensure brand consistency, that events have to be approved before they can sign up to sponsor or attend. And also then if an event is being funded by the organisation, that it's being appropriately measured and tracked. So that's something that's impacting me quite considerably on a day-to-day basis, much greater stronger processes around measurement and tracking. I put a few others up here, and I'd be really interested in your thoughts on those in terms of budget, CSR, and particularly travel restrictions and corporate policies. So does anybody... Anna, can I pick on you? Because I really would like to just bring you into this discussion. Where's my lady with the microphone? And Anna, if you wouldn't mind just introducing yourself and your role.
So good morning, everyone. My name is Anna Frick. I'm from AstraZeneca. I'm also representing the pharma industry. Later on today, we have a special session on that. Trying to serve that session. Yes, I think this speaks very much to what we're going through in the pharma industry. In the past, and I think many of you are starting to experience it this year, 2010, because, you know, with our meetings, it takes a long time for preparation. Our big congresses, usually way in advance, we have committed. I have experienced this year sitting in many, many meetings with very frustrated people where I can't commit because we have the purchasing department involved. I have nowadays to make a business case for every individual congress that I'm going to. Why am I going? What is my return on objectives? We're not talking about money side here. What is the kind of activity that I'm going to do? What are my target groups? And then I have to put this into perspective with the compliance, which we're going to talk quite a lot about in the afternoon. So the decision-making process is so prolonged that I had this year at AstraZeneca, I made my commitments for 2010 in October.
Wow.
So you can see there's a shift here going on. And it's quite lengthy, this process. So I'm sorry for that.
Anna, when you said that you were making commitments in October for 2010, how does that shift your options? I mean, because obviously a lot of the activities you do will be around major congresses where the decision on the location has already been decided. But also I know there are a number of standalone proprietary events. Can you share any feedback for those suppliers that may be in the room?
Yeah, I think you're going to see, when we talk about this
afternoon. Don't worry about it. We're going to talk much more. I have a pre-sale of this now, why this is happening and what is going on. And you will see that we have cut down on budgets, for sure. But what we have done is that we're not really cutting down on what we're spending. It's just who is actually spending this money in the company. And it's no longer the marketing department, per se, that will be responsible for spending all this money. It has shifted over to our R&D colleagues, which has a completely different set of needs. And they will require different services from you that I, in the past, as a marketeer, was asking for. And we touched upon it when it came to virtual meetings. Virtual meetings are taking a huge leap in the pharma industry, I must say. And since we are so much about disseminating data, virtual meetings actually are quite good at disseminating data. And I think that the Congress organizers need to work very much on this networking things and really build that for the Congresses for the future. So you have a clear distinction about these two different formats of actually meeting in the pharma industry.
Thank you very much, Anna. And what time's your session? So we could give it a...
My session is at 3 o'clock upstairs.
Great. Excellent.
Okay.
Yes, gentleman at the back and then here at the front. Thank you.
Hello. My name is Rudy Janssen with TNSC in Switzerland. I have a question regarding the requirements that you identified, the shift from marketing to R&D, which I find very interesting because apparently the pipeline is very crucial in how these companies will evolve in the future. You identified the need for virtual meetings and the attention it's getting for data dissemination. What does that require of you as a person involved in organizing the events, and what does it require of your team?
Thank you.
To be honest, I mean, my team is project leading the sort of delivering of meetings, and the project leading doesn't shift that much. It's just the format that is different. I think that we're still in the very beginning of virtual meetings, and I think there's so much still that needs to be done to really maximize what you can get out of it. Definitely. But I think that when we now talk to our R&D colleagues, it's a bit different kind of discussions that we have with them, because their requirements are a bit different. I also see that doctors, the younger generation doctors, have a different need to actually come and meet their peers and discuss. So you will see that also the exhibit area for our case will change. So they don't want to go there and see a sales rep that they can meet back home, hear about it, the same old that they've heard about for maybe the last 6 months. They want to come and meet their peer that actually is working within the pharma industry to understand what's going on in your industry. Yeah. What are your research going on? Can I be on board on this? What interesting clinical trials is actually going on? That's the kind of things that they're looking for. And what we see is also that the new generation doctors might not walk around and shop around in the exhibit area. They know what they want, and they will go directly to that exhibit with that specific question and ask the question, and they expect you to be able to answer it.
And I think that just to add to Anna's comment, that's not unique to the pharmaceutical industry. It ties in with what I was talking about earlier on, is that audiences want their content on their terms, focused on their needs and their requirements, rather than this big mass marketing. So key opportunity there to really drive on focus on the individual and the audience segmentation and their needs.
Can I maybe ask one additional question to yourself from your perspective of the Cisco experience?
Yes.
The fact that it's being held digitally provides tremendous power to track the movement, motion, and activities of the individual participants.
Absolutely.
Much more than you could in a live environment, for instance.
Yeah,
we are not geotagged as individuals.
Yeah.
What does George P. Johnson, how does it impact the team that you have, and how do you measure the ROI? Are those new measurement tools coming into place? What shift do you see there from your perspective?
It was a very long time in the development of that activity. It wasn't something that just happened. There was obviously a big shift. What did it take from our side in terms of measurement? I think that As an organisation, and I joined GPJ just a couple of years ago from another agency, and I would say that I think that's something that the company is very strong on. This isn't a sales push for them, but I think if you've got a robust strategy, a process in place that is sort of really part of your DNA in how you operate, you can make that shift. As I said, an event is an event is an event, whether it's live, digital, virtual, hybrid, whatever we want to call it, it's an event, and the same kind of processes and practices come into play. I think you're right, the increased volume of data that you can get from that type of activity is fabulous. But it really, it's fundamentally the same kind of focus process throughout. So we had another question just down here at the front. Can we get a...
Yeah, I would say as a microcosm of the overall economy, from my point of view, from MPI, is we see companies who maybe had two or three members in the past now knock it down maybe one member, or some people, what they haven't said, we don't think MPI is valuable. What they'll say is, you can be involved in MPI as a member, but we're not going to pay for it. If you want to pay for it on your own dime, you can stay involved in MPI, but we as a company can't afford to pay for the membership, but we don't mind that you're involved. So that kind of throws it back on the member to, if they want to stay involved, they may have to pay for it themselves, which is not fair at all, but it's certainly a reality we want to deal with. One other thing from a technology standpoint, because I came from a long history with Marriott as an audiovisual director, is one thing in the past 10 years in the U.S. I would say for sure is the increase in high-speed internet and people's access to email and so on, is a lot of corporate clients and associations will not go to a hotel or a resort or a convention center that isn't, has a very strong, robust, high-speed internet and access to all the good, really good technology. They really won't. I mean, they will turn a venue down that's not strong in that area or won't give them a good price. They'll negotiate a better deal for that specifically, or they won't come. That is it's a key deal breaker in a lot of ways to a venue getting an event, is to make sure the technology is good and solid and fast, or they really might think second about going to a place.
Thank you, Michael. And that ties in, well, just over here, and I think we need to wrap up, but that also ties into the virtual event session that we were in yesterday, where a large number of organizations have telepresence suites in their offices now, and major hotel groups, Marriott, I believe, one of them, and convention centers are now looking at installing this kind of technology in their infrastructure, because if they don't, they'll miss out on business. Because those that do will actually be top of the list for some of those companies that use telepresence as part of their everyday business activity. So we take one final question and then we'll wrap up.
It was not a question, actually. I just wanted to react on what Anna was saying. I'm Madeline. I work for ECHO, European Cancer Organization. So I sit on the other side of it. We organize medical congresses, and I can only confirm what she says. Even though the budgets are still there, they're handled completely different, and we associations have to adapt our approach and strategy to discuss with industry, because we really face a lot more involvement from the purchasing departments, and they have to justify.
Right.
How and what they want to commit to.
So from an association perspective, how's that shifted the way that you have to communicate? Can you give me a specific example?
But for instance, we used to work 2 years ahead, mm-hmm. and we feel we have to accept later commitments,
right.
and later planning on everything, because commitments come way later than they used to come. And that means a lot of changes in how we work internally,
right.
because everything needs to be shifted.
Yeah. So that has a knock-on impact just on every single touch point along that supply chain,
yeah,
too.
And I think that what I'm going to ask for you guys, in order to build my case internally, is a lot of background data. I'm going to ask much more about the demography, who I'm actually seeing there. I mean, much, much more robust data that I can present back to my senior management team in order to help me to sell this meeting.
Yeah, absolutely. It's all about the good stats and data. Thank you very much, and thank you, Anna, for that. And as I said, Anna's session's at 3 o'clock this afternoon. One more plug. I've heard Anna speak before. It's very, very interesting what's going on in that pharmaceutical and healthcare community, but actually I think applies very readily to other industry sectors. I'd just like to wrap up, I think, right on time. Thank you very much for all joining in today. I didn't have too many people running out of the room. I think that's a reasonably good sign. I hope the presentation that was put together a bit on the fly last night met your expectations. If there's any other questions or anything, I'll be around during the coffee break. But otherwise, enjoy the rest of your day. And please don't forget to complete your SpotMe evaluations. I believe that's what I'm supposed to ask. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you.